Tim Downey, everyone, actor, comedian, producer, Governor Tryon of North Carolina. I actually just found out that you were in Drunk History, the UK.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was a UK version, and it kind of makes sense because the dry humor.
Exactly, and the Brits like drinking, strangely, so...
Yeah, that too. And so you played Charles the First, right?
Played a multitude of different parts. I played like Napoleon's, I think it was Napoleon's right-hand man who was drunk a lot of the time. Sort of lost the Battle of Waterloo, something like that. And then I was on Scott's Antarctic expedition, which we recorded on a ski slope in Hemel Hempstead, which if you know Hemel Hempstead, and not a lot of people will know, it's literally the last place on Earth you'd look at and go, oh, there must be a ski slope there. It's like a dome with a one slope inside. That's it. But it's real snow. That's the key thing. So we did that. And I played it like a runner as well, who like broke the 4-minute mile. Other little parts and pieces like that, but it was great fun. It was really good fun.
Unfortunately, we can't get it over here in the US. It's like impossible to find it. I could not
contraband.
Find that.
Contraband.
Yeah, contraband. Yeah, nice. Yeah. So you can do comedy and serious roles, more dramatic roles, which is how I came across you in Outlander as Governor Tryon, and or as I sometimes mistakenly pronounce it, Governor Tyron.
Outrageous. You'd be the first against the wall when the revolution comes. I tell you, insubordination like that.
So you don't mispronounce your name like that. He doesn't say it. I'm Governor Tyron sometimes like that.
If again he was drunk, and then if anyone agreed with him, they would be the first against the wall when the revolution comes.
Oh, it's the test. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay.
It's a simple process of quite literally elimination.
Quite lucky to be alive now than back then. You were the perfect person for that role. Holy God, you're so believable as the governor. Oh my God.
How did you get that role?
Yeah. How did that come across your plate?
Well, it's one of those things. It just sort of came up as in a part of Sam. So I was very much aware of the show and all what was going on there. And then, originally, there was a part for Outlander that came up where I was playing, I think it was whilst they were in South Africa, and it was one of the twins, these kind of like card sharp twins, confidence tricksters, I think they were. So I was out for one of those, and I thought, oh, okay, this will be fun. Went in, thought, oh, I've done very well here, didn't get it. Thought, okay, well, that was nice while it lasted. And then, sure enough, I suppose about 8 months, 9 months later, this part came up, and I thought, oh, this would be great fun actually to do, because it is serious, but there are so many levels and layers to it. Just kind of within the world that someone like this would inhabit, it's a fascinating journey to kind of go on with it. And so you go in, you do your casting, you kind of go, well, I've learned the words and I'll do the bit.
Yeah.
And you hope that you get it. And sure enough, I did. And yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. And it was fantastic as well to be not only involved in the fourth series, but also the fifth series as well. So I don't think he was meant to be in that. So that was great fun. But yeah, just happenstance and luck and being fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time.
A lot of luck for us too. I mean, seriously, you were both kind of like warm, but also terrifying as a British governor. Just, you know, at least from an American point of view, we're like, you know, those are the baddies. So, Governor Tryon served under George III. Are you a George III fan? What are your thoughts on him?
On George III? No, isn't George III, is that the madness of King George?
Yes, he went mad several times and, yeah.
That's right. And the play by Alan Bennett, who wrote The Madness of King George,
which is
absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think Nigel Hawthorne plays in. It's an extraordinary piece of English history and moment in time. The idea that we control everything, pretty much. We haven't quite got to Australia yet, I don't think, and we haven't conquered India yet. Mm-hmm. But we're well on the way to creating that empire. And I think it's in those young stages that a nation goes through when they have empires to build, or in their sights, or where they can see, oh, there's angles we can do this. We can really push or beat like the Spanish and the French and things like that. It's a really interesting moment in time for any country. And I think it's when you then have that going on in the world and you have a class system like the English have and had, and then you you pitch all of those things together and kind of push it together with money and time and power and the illusion of power that these people have. And also, I, as I always try to think about when I was there, is that Tryon was governing an area of just land, not even a whole country, just that piece of land that was like five times the size of the country he was actually from. And so for all intents and purposes, you were a king. You were a king. You could walk around, you could decree things. It would take you like 6 weeks for a letter to go back to London and 6 weeks for it to come back again. By the time that happened, you could have, God only knows what you could have done. I mean, you literally could have leveled everything for all you know. So it's a really interesting. And then pits that against a monarch that is slowly going mad, or is he, or isn't he?
On, off.
Gets better, doesn't it, King George? In inverted commas. You know, he gets better, and then it's like a hereditary thing within the bloodline of these, almost like moments of madness. So yeah, when you pitch yourselves against that, throw money into it and power, then it's a powder keg.
So you're kind of a history fan already, but did you have to do any extra research for that role, or how did you kind of get into that headspace?
I did a lot of reading around of the character, read up a lot about Tryon, where he's from, what his background was, where he was born, parents, things like that. I find that very interesting. I think it's really interesting when you put it within a class system. So in other words, someone like Tryon would have led the most extreme privilege that you could imagine. You know, think of privilege now, then just it goes through the roof, because there is that absolute sense that you are an empire builder. You, sir, you, my boy, you will conquer great lands. You will do this. People will bow down to you and all of these things. And if you say that enough and to those young minds where no one around is really going to tell you any different, it creates a certain mentality. And then it's being able to sort of go, right, okay, well, that's the mentality. That's where he lives, and that's where his sort of reasoning is. And then you pitch that and you throw it into a group of people that you have complete power over, and you just kind of ignite it and let it go, because it will naturally, is like oil and water. It will naturally go on for someone who believes themselves to be better than
great.
You. I'm better than you. I'm English.
Yeah.
I went to such school. I'm obviously better than you. I don't even need a conversation about it. And I think that's a very different mentality and a very interesting thing to get into the psyche of.
Yeah. Wow. Did that translate over into, like, you know, the character mindset into your family life? Like, make me breakfast.
I could try. believe you me, I could try. I could try that. If I pulled that in this house, that's never gonna happen.
Yeah.
I've tried. It's fun to try.
Yeah. Really, really fun. Yeah. So Georgian era or Tudor era? Which are you more of a fan of?
Do enjoy the Tudors.
Mm.
I do enjoy the Tudors.
It's pretty
strong about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's an aesthetic to it that I particularly like. Now, obviously, when I say this, I'm perfectly aware that I'm talking about a very high echelon of society, of which that is a possibility. Otherwise, I'd be, you know, sleeping with the donkeys
right on the mud
in a barn.
Yeah,
you know, like shoveling mud into a bag and then taking that mud inside and eating it. You know, I'm very aware how that is. But that sort of Tudor period, I find very interesting. Second Ice Age as well, of course, which was quite interesting. Hence all the big furs that they were wearing. So we were going through that period. Aesthetically, I find it very interesting. There was a great deal of magic involved in that sort of period as well, like very belief in superstition and things like that to its detriment, but also it's a fascinating thing to mix all those kind of things together, the burgeoning sciences, but also a very firm belief in alchemy and things like that. Yeah, they're very, very fascinating.
I don't think I've found a person yet that doesn't say Tudor is kind of their preferred. So I just kind of like to ask people, like, all right, just throwing it out there. You played a Georgian era kind of character. So yeah, Tudor, don't blame you. Same here. So also I wanted to quickly talk about, you host multiple podcasts. You're like a podcast machine.
Oh,
Where I really, really enjoyed Outcast. That was your podcast where you went on with other actors from the show Outlander. Mm. And I think it was the last one that I listened to was the one with Sam. And you guys, so we're doing that role switching thing. And there's a lot of like burping and stuff going on. And it was like, oh my God, this is such boy humor. It's really funny. But I wanted to ask you, who came up with the idea for reading a scene from the show and specifically for the role reversal when the actors read the scenes as different characters? How did that happen?
It's a very good question. It's been a while now because it was David and I sort of like COVID bonding.
Because we
would record it almost exactly the same as this. Record it and then just sort of sit for about another hour and a half and just have a nice chat. It was lovely. It was a lovely, lovely thing. But as to who came up with it, I kind of feel that David came up with the idea that we should read a scene, and that would be quite interesting. And then be slightly subversive if we can, honoring the scene and be very respectful of the scene, but playing around with it. And then I thought maybe I threw in like, oh, we should just see who would swap roles. Like, let's throw it back to the other actors and just see what they would say.
Brilliant.
Said, okay, who do you want to play? You can't play yourself. Who's it going to be? And see what they come back with. But it was just great, great fun.
Yeah.
And just being very playful. And the scripts are brilliant. Like, the scripts are really brilliantly written. And so you're kind of honoring them by saying, well, these are brilliant. Let us just play around and see what we come up with. But it was great fun.
Very, very, very fun to listen to. Do you have a favorite time where the roles were reversed in one of the episodes that was just particularly fun?
Do I have a favorite? I think any time that I got to play Sam, which is quite fun.
And of course.
Sort of do as rough a Scots accent as I possibly could. No offense, please. Yeah, my dad's Scottish. It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. It's okay.
It's perfectly fine. Yeah, I can do it. That was really, really good fun. But also the most fun comes when the other actor or the other actors that are there just throw themselves into it. So if they are playing Claire or, anyone, Brianna, anyone at all, but they really throw themselves into it, that's when you have the most fun. That's when it really sets off and you go, yeah, okay, this is going to be fun. It's not just going to be a series of silly voices. It's going to have some, they're putting a little bit of, into this. This is great.
Mm-hmm. I wish we could have more of that. I wish if you're ever like, I'm bored and I have millions of hours, like, just throwing it out there, do some more of that because it was really entertaining.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah. So also, I was listening to your podcast, Folklore, and you're still doing that one currently, right?
Yes.
You go out to places and locations that have folklore surrounding them. You kind of just see what it's all about. And so how did that one happen? That is so interesting. And
well, it's been a thing that's happened my entire life. I've loved folklore, even when I didn't even really know that it was called folklore, because they were just like local tales or just sayings and phrases and things like that. And I think you just kind of generally pick these things up. And then many years ago, on pretty much everyone's shelf in the UK in the 80s was a book called the Reader's Digest Book of Folklore, Myths and Legends. Mm. And it's just sitting just over there behind a fawn. Don't ask why. Don't ask questions.
All right.
Just over there. And it is the foremost book of folklore and legends in the UK. Never bettered, I would hazard a guess. It's just, it's so much stuff. It's just ridiculous. So as a kid, you would pore over this book, and you would find tales and try to find where you lived and where's close and I think there was, and all of those kind of things. Anyway, one grows up and does other things and kind of drifts off. And then suddenly I found this book again on like a market stall in a tiny village. And I was like, oh my God, this is the book. This is the book. This is the book that my parents had. This is amazing. And then I did a podcast where they said, what would you bury in a time capsule? One of the things I said was, this book I would bury because it is almost like a foundation stone into who I became, my sort of love of the wild and the magical and the strange and mysterious and the sort of dark but yet storytelling and the joy of storytelling and all of those things are kind of wrapped up within folklore. And Justin, who I co-present with, just happened to be at his family home in Guernsey, which is a small channel island off the UK. I just happened to hear it and was like, oh my god, the book is also on my shelf. Here is the same book, as he was clearing out his house. And so we got in contact. We'd worked together before. We did a comedy series called This Is Jinsey, which was set on an island very similar to Guernsey. Basically small island life full of folklore and weird traditions. That there's some very strange traditions. Justin will probably tell me this is not true, but I read it at the time to be true, that in Guernsey, if you wanted to stop someone building something, like you're just walking, but you have to live in Guernsey.
Oh, okay.
Walking past a building site, doesn't matter if you're from the area or not, as long as you are resident and you are registered on Guernsey, you can drop to your knee, say the Lord's Prayer, and the foreman has to stop and come and tell you what they're doing.
What?
I know. Isn't that amazing?
So amazing.
Yeah. Okay. You've got to imagine as well, but Guernsey probably only has about 500 people living on it. So
okay,
it's
but
very, very small.
Can we try that? Can we do that? Like,
You should absolutely, if you see some sort of massive construction site, you should just walk straight over to the foreman, go down on your knee and say the Lord's Prayer.
That is hilarious.
Definitely stop them. Will definitely be stopped to look at this.
One way or another, they're going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
Oh my, I would pay to see that. That is really funny. So I have to ask this. So since you go around to all these different places, which is really, really cool, by the way, I know that the stones in Outlander are fictional, but have you ever thought of visiting I don't know if I'm saying this right, the Killarnish stones or Killarnish stones? They're
yes.
in Scotland and they're kind
they
of
are. Yes.
similar, 5,000 years old. Have you ever considered going there?
Very, very much.
Yeah?
Very, very much. Like at the moment, we're just doing England because it's where we can find time to grab and then drive to. We just did one the other day where we drove the furthest we have gone, almost to the end of the country, which in UK terms is like, well, that's just like the back of beyond, even though it's probably about 4 hours drive. You know, it's that
inconceivable for Americans.
Like, that's an afternoon for you. For us, that's a weekend. Like, just no. We'll have to have stop-offs and breaks, and no one does that. But yeah, we would love to do. We'd love to do Scotland. We've had invitations from haunted Scottish castles saying, please come and stay and all of these kind of things. There's some extraordinary things like the fairy flag that we would like to go and see that only gets unfurled at times of strife for the family that are there. Extraordinary things. Hauntings. There's a werewolf. One werewolf in Scotland. And there's one werewolf in the UK. It's a European import. They aren't naturalized to the UK. But there's some extraordinary things.
Please do that. That is amazing.
Would just simply adore. Simply adore.
Yes.
There's like Pictish trails and carvings on stone. I mean, it's rife. Rife.
Yeah.
The oldest tree in the UK, I think, is in a Scottish churchyard. It's this like 1,500-year-old yew tree that sort of saw the Romans come in. It saw it's seen everything. One of those extraordinary things. Yeah, in a kirkyard somewhere.
These are just so exciting. I'm so jealous that you get to go to. We have, like, you know, our history kind of starts at the American colonial history is where our American history starts at, you know, 1607. Everything before then is kind of, and, you know, and all that stuff's kind of gone. We don't have all these, like, 1500-year-old tree that saw yada yada happen. Nothing was really recorded history then over here. So I'm very jealous. And before we go, I want to comment on that you awesomely play the voice of Gale in Baldur's Gate 3.
And
yeah, and that comes actually across my YouTube shorts feed a lot, the little clips and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, I know that voice. So I'm not going to give away any spoilers or anything like that. Does that character kind of remind you of anybody historically, or do you think of anybody from history when you're kind of getting into the voice or anything like that?
When it comes to history, I mean, it's one of those funny things when I was doing Gale is I didn't really think to myself, oh, he's probably quite similar to me and probably has my likes and things like that. And then I realized, like, I'm looking at the picture now of me and it's just surrounded by books. It's just heaving with just history of this and just, you go, oh, okay, yes, the stones never fall that far, really. But yeah, when it comes to history, I like to... There's lots of old magicians that are fascinating within English history. People like John Dee, who was the Queen Elizabeth's magician. He foretold the coming of the Armada. And so the English set sail against the Armada and foretold that the weather would change and smash them against the rocks. And that's when the Armada kind of went off and landed in Wales and things like that. So he was greatly lauded. Then obviously it takes a bit of a change when you bring in magic in money and position and power and things like that. But still to this day, where his house once stood in Mortlake will not be built on. So it literally, there's a big gap. John Dee House, which is a block of flats, and then opposite that there is a block of flats. It stops. There's a little gap of just grass that runs down to the Thames, and then the house picks up again on the other side and carries on.
What?
Nobody will build on a house on the area of the magician.
That is so cool.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that so unbelievably cool? But he was the inspiration for Marlowe's Dr. Faustus. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think he is an extraordinary figure, historical figure, and has so much within it. But it's just basically just reading. Reading was the big thing for me. And just the enjoyment of history and finding out those little bits and pieces and then kind of pulling them all together. Especially for someone like Gale, because it was vast. It took 4 years to record. So
4 years. You've got
4 years. We recorded it a little bit over COVID. So I did some in this house upstairs in my daughter's bedroom, kind of picked her out and said, right, I'm going to have to record, like, all sorts of strange sounds. And also, you knew everyone was at home during COVID. It wasn't like you were, I'm fine now, I can do this, and no one's going to be listening. No, you know everybody's there, wondering what on earth, what screaming sounds you're doing. Why is it a strange house? But yeah, it was great fun. So I think, I think those are the things. A lot of reading. I'm finding in John Dee, I think.
That's cool. And is there anything else you're working on right now that's exciting that you want to talk about?
I've just finished a couple of films. One is a retelling of Romeo and Juliet, which has been really good fun. A great little film. We filmed it over the summer. Hopefully that'll be coming out next year. I think it'll do festivals and hopefully end up Netflix, Amazon. That's usually what happens. And then I did another really nice film with Derek Jacobi about Lucian Freud, the artist and painter Lucian Freud, and about a particular moment in history, if you like, where he painted Kate Moss. Because Kate Moss, in an interview in the 90s, said, the only thing that I haven't done has been painted by a master. And so Lucian Freud heard of this, or someone told him, I think it was his daughter, Esther Freud.
Wow.
And said, oh, my dad should paint you. He's Lucian Freud. So then began this 9 months, basically this sitting of Kate Moss in front of Lucian Freud. And so it's the relationship between them. And I play David Dawson, who was actually left Lucian Freud's house and all of his archive, as he was his assistant for the last 25 years. So it's almost like a little three-hander, if you like. It's mainly between the relationship between Lucien and Kate and then Isaac. The conduit between the two, between the young ingenue and the sort of cantankerous old master.
And that's out?
That will come out. That's come out hopefully next year. Hopefully next year.
Okay. So we'll keep. And what's the name of it?
That's called Moss and Freud.
Okay. So keep an eye out for that. That is very cool. Tim, thank you so much for joining me and answering all of my questions. And I could probably sit and talk to you for a very long time, but I know it's kind of late over there too. So thank you.
It's an absolute pleasure.